Welcome, everybody, to Drive to Win. I'm Justin Bell, your host, and the show is presented by The Win Las Vegas and brought to you by Mobile One for the love of driving. Well, what a weekend. I actually had a great time watching the race in Barcelona for so many reasons, because I think it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. It all sort of brings the celebration. Also, coming off the back of the last couple of races, there was so much to play for. And I think our expectations have raised recently about what we can expect from a Formula One race in so many ways. Well, my guest today is Willie T. Ribbs. Willie is one of the true personalities of the world of motorsports. I'll get into his background in a minute, but believe me, you're going to want to stay tuned because he is a character and I've known him a long time. Can't wait to get him on the show. Well, Max won, right? But that's not the end of the story. There was so much more going on that led you to really get into the race and see how that unfolded. And of course, with pole position being held by Lando Norris, you really knew you were in for a fight. And it did turn out to be a scrap at moments through the race as it all unfolded. And then obviously the podium results sounded particularly juicy this week. Not on the top spot with Max Verstappen winning. I mean, the Dutchman, he took the championship lead after winning the Spanish Grand Prix in 2022. And do you know what? Here's a fact. He hasn't lost it since. That is a run of 763 days at the top of the championship table. Now, if that gives you some job security, nothing else would. It is a remarkable feat, but it wasn't an easy race for Max. In some ways, when he was able to exert his trademark dominance on the race and control it from the front, it did seem pretty easy. But you know, when it comes to monitoring those gaps between him, the delta between him and the guys behind him, it's not quite so easy for him to manage. Lando Norris, he had the fastest car. It's definitely a situation of could have, should have, would have. And just seeing his elation at getting pole, it really does show that McLaren, there are upgrades. It's much more than upgrades now. It's about getting into that mindset and of winning, basically. And I guess when I try and interpret and examine what happened during the race, it all went wrong for him. On the start, he didn't have a bad start. I was thinking, you know, every race, and I think if you're a fan of the show, you know, back at the early part of the season and last year, I was always like, why do you let Max get off the line so fast? Beat him to the first corner. And I definitely saw Lando's car make the first move off the line. I thought, this is very good. It does sound, especially when you do the onboard with Verstappen, that once he gets into probably second, third, fourth gear, his car seems to have great traction. I don't know whether it was his throttle control, because remember, that is all down to the driver at that point. And he seems to have, other than the initial getaway, he does seem to be able to pull away pretty strong. But, of course, the sensation of the start, and I love watching the restarts, the replay, was when George Russell, from fourth on the grid, comes whistling around the outside and takes the lead. I'll tell you, as a driver, I think Max and Lando were locked in their own little world, looking at each other, pushing him, Max onto the grass a bit, like doing a bit of grass cutting and keeping Max get his foot in wide open. And George just saw the gap. And we saw this move repeated throughout the race, that they're able to just, with self-belief, confidence in their car, relying on the downforce, especially on the right tires, just sailed around the outside. Definitely, Lando and Max had to comply and not like dive in extra deep and take that extra 2 or 3 meters into the corner. But it was beautiful by George Russell. I mean, absolutely. But it totally spanned up Lando's process, you know, his game plan. And he pretty much had to then, when Verstappen went past Norris, he had to go. It affected his race pace, basically, and he was at least a second off the pace at that point. And it totally unraveled the McLaren strategy. And at the end of the race, well, he probably could have done with those couple of seconds. It was just very, very good. Lewis Hamilton rounded out the top three and back on the podium for the first time since last October in Mexico City, which has been 12 races. And you could just hear the way he talked to the team. That was a strong race. Thank you to everyone back at the factory. And I think for Lewis has been grumbling, and he can be very clever with his words, both from in and out of the car. Remember, he's been at this game a long time, and he generally puts things down. I've got the worst car, I've got this. And here he is delivering a great result, especially after he said, I'll never really beat George for the rest of the year, especially as I'm leaving. But boy, oh boy, he did. So, I mean, a really, really great race, and a lot to unpack when I get in and talk with Willie about this, because I have so many questions that I need a little bit of help with. What about the tire? Why tire management? Why are they putting different drivers on different strategies? I get that, but why are they on hards when you know the hard tire can't do the pace and the soft tire can last to, you know, at least 20, 25 laps? There's so many things that we aren't privy to, but I really would like to try and work out why that is, because it has a definite effect on the outcome of the race. Lots going on in the paddock, and before we dive in with our guest, it's still, as Kevin Magnussen said in the briefing, he said the cork in the bottle in the driver lineup and everyone being able to work out what they're going to do for the future is Carlos Sainz. And I'm sure more than one driver is going up to him going, hey, mate, just give us a hint. What are you trying to do? What is your plans? Because it literally will be the last domino that falls that will set in motion all the drivers' contracts. And there's a lot of nervous people, Kevin Magnussen being one of them. I mean, the fact is going into next year is still, I know I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but in 2026, is Williams ready for a driver like him? James Fowles is saying he's lining up all the right people. They'll have the right engines. But, you know, that's a bit of a long shot. And I mentioned it before, you know, the Drive to Survive fan, you have no memory of how good Williams was. They were extraordinary. They had a period of dominance similar to Red Bull, and yet they've fallen off the boil. But they're definitely investing the money in the talent to bring it back. But is that what Carlos should do? Or should he go to Audi? That is definitely, they're the team who are going to be coming in with the big, big budget, the might of VW Group, and you know they're serious about it. I was actually talking with Alan McNeish at Le Mans. Alan and I were contemporaries all the way back in Vauxhall Lotus and Formula Ford, and he went on to race for Toyota in Formula One. He went on to win Le Mans multiple times, one of the top Audi drivers, and now he pretty much runs their motorsport department. And, you know, without giving secrets away, he was just like, you know, we would love him. It's not a question of a deal. It's a question of whether he wants to take the deal. And so many amazing pieces going into play. I would not bet against Audi when it comes to being on the top. So Valtteri Bottas waiting on Carlos. So an awful lot happening. One of the things that I really did also find interesting this week was, do you remember Mick Schumacher? You do see him standing there in the garage. He's a reserve test driver with Mercedes. And he obviously the son of seven-time world champion Michael Schumacher. He didn't really have a fair crack in Formula One, but that it just shows how important that intrinsic knowledge is of the systems, of how to drive the sims, of how to do everything. He's kept his hand in very much in Formula One and apparently being tested by Alpine right now, which just shows their intent, and it would be an interesting twist. There is also something special about bringing a Schumacher back into the sport. So, you know, all eyes on that. But a face that to us oldies in Formula One, as Formula One fans, that is making his way back into the news cycle is Flavio Briatore. And he's back in the paddock with Alpine to be like a special executive advisor. Growing up, there was, you know, the playboys of our sport that I think all of us, I don't know, as guys, thought were pretty charming and inspirational, maybe for the wrong reasons. And Flavio was one of those. He dated the world's most beautiful supermodels. He had yachts. He was a character in the paddock and, you know, with that whole Benetton scene. And it was just a very vibrant time in motorsport. You know, we had grid girls, we had all this stuff. And he was definitely one of those very brilliant businessmen, but a playboy to boot. Anyway, he led the team back in the day under its old name to multiple championships as team principal. And then they had this awful race-fixing scandal, which pretty much made him have to resign and get out of the sport. But, you know, as we've seen in many other examples across professional sports, the past is the past. It's all about the future. And you know, the team principal, Bruno Famin, is saying, don't worry about the past. If he can help us get to the future and develop, especially the drivers and contract negotiations, I think it'd be quite fun to have him back in the paddock. So, you know, as much as things are new, sometimes you have to go back to the guys that made the sport great in their own way. And then there was, it's just a minor thing, but I did speak to a couple of the people at McLaren. You know, they had a motorhome fire in the paddock, which was, you see the proximity of these villages they build. They're multi-million dollar, very modular hospitality units and motorhomes that travel around the world. And with the logistics that happens in Formula One, it's quite, you know, everything has to go to plan to be able to make the next race, especially with this triple header. Anyway, they had a fire. One of the journalists said he was sitting there and they suddenly saw smoke coming out of the kitchen area. And all the teams collaborated. Everybody gave a lot of support. Obviously, McLaren having VIP guests come in and team personnel to feed and everything. So it just shows that even though it's cutthroat out on track, when it comes to unifying in when things go wrong for someone, they certainly know how to do it. So a lot happening, especially going into this weekend's next race in Austria, which is going to be so exciting. Well, hey, race fans, Justin Bell here. What is it about a race that's so exciting? The breakneck speeds, the constant pressure, the ever-present threat of danger, or is it simply the driving? Just think about it. No phones, no laptops, no screens, just the world's greatest drivers, cars, and the ultimate freedom. Yep. It's definitely all of the above. Mobile One for the love of driving. Visit loveofdriving.us/drive to win to learn all about it. Willie T. Ribbs, he was the first black driver to ever test a Formula One car. He competed at the Indy 500 twice. He raced in pretty much everything else, NASCAR, I mean, sports cars. He did it all, but he really found his niche and it suited his driving style in the infamous Trans Am series. Trans Am at that time, Dan Gurney ran cars. Tommy Kendall, my great friend and co-host on the Torch Show, he was a big part of it. Ron Fellows, I mean, some incredible drivers really made their, Scott Pruitt, I mean, they all made their mark in Trans Am. And Willie T. Ribbs was one of the best behind the wheels. He had cowboy boots, trademark cowboy hat, and big belt buckles. He was, you know, man, he was just a total star. And after the sport, he went on to quite literally be a sharpshooter, became a championship-winning shotguns, I think it was. So very excited to have him on the show. I've been waiting for a while. He was brought on at Formula One, I think it was in Miami last year, to be the interviewer of the drivers on the podium. So he's had first-hand experience of Formula One and knows what it takes. So let's bring him on the show. Well, Willie, good to see you, my friend. Welcome to Drive to Win.
Well, JB, you know, we've known each other how many years? 40? Going on 40 years?
That's sobering, my friend. Jeez.
Yeah, we still have a pulse.
We still have a pulse. Do you know what I was just thinking of? This image as I see you there in your sharp little F1 shirt. I remember the first time I met you. You walked in, and we walked into the IndyCar hospitality, and you were wearing that suede jacket with all those tassels on, and you had your hat on and your cowboy boots. And I thought, "Wow, I'm not in London anymore. This dude is different." It was so funny. You remember you took me under your wing?
Well, I live in Texas. I live in Texas. As a matter of fact, I was out this morning before our show setting targets for Theo.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about it. So you after you finish racing, before we jump into the Formula One stuff, you went on to be a pretty good crack shot yourself. And then your son is world championship material, right?
Yeah, a lot of the golfers, you know, I was doing an interview with the BBC at Nazareth in 1993. And she says, Willie, most of the race drivers like Nigel, and it would have to do with Nigel, we've known forever, they golf in their spare time. What do you like to do? I said, whatever I do has got to make noise. That's a race car engine. That's a shotgun, and that's a woman in bed. she says, She looked at the producer and says, can we use that? He says, hell yeah.
That's exactly the reason I got into racing. Thank you. There you are. You just summed it up. That's so funny. So, and just, you know, tell everyone what you're doing now, because I saw you at the Formula One race last year doing the podium interviews, which was great. Was that Miami?
That was.
Okay. That was cool, man. That was great. That was great.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I've got my relationship with Formula One is one of their ambassadors. And I got to tell you, working with Formula One is just the best. They are just on another planet when it comes to professionalism and the way you're treated and the everything they do. Everything's a red carpet with Formula One, and I enjoy working with them, and I enjoy working with the other ambassadors, Mika Hakkinen and I, we have a ball. Mike is funny as hell.
Isn't he? You know, because we did Vauxhall Lotus together, and there you got this Finnish kid who wasn't a great talker at that time. He was very quiet under Marlborough's program, you know, at the time with Alan McNeish. He was riding his unicycle around the paddock, and as he's got older, and you see, he is one funny man, isn't he? And he's one of the best guys to ever get behind the wheel of a Formula One car. So it's fun. It's great to hear you say you have a good relationship.
Oh, I love Mike. He is just, you know, not only was he a great driver, but he's a great entertainer as well.
Yeah.
And we've done a couple of gigs together, and people were just on their feet. And on their feet, dying, laughing.
Yeah. Well, you know what I like about you in everything you do? You bring your spin to it, right? Tommy Kendall, TK, for our fans, you know, watching the show, my co-host in talk show and one of the best Trans Am drivers ever, one of your great rivals. When we called each other the minute it happened, when you're interviewing Leclerc up on the thing, you go, hey, Chuck. So how was the race? I'm going, no one's ever called anyone. You know, you create your own nicknames for people on the spot. And I thought it was just brilliant. I mean, you love that, well, right? You love bringing your own spin.
Hey, everybody's got a nickname belt. And with me. Oh. And Chuck Leclerc just was a natural. And my son, Theo, who's training, actually he's at the World Championships this weekend. Theo text me. I wasn't even back into the paddock club from doing an interview, and Theo texts me and says, what did you say? I said, well, I don't know. He says, it's gone viral in France.
Well, that's you,
and
brother.
He said, yeah, he says, I said, well, what, Chuck? I said, yeah, he looks like a Chuck. Chuck McClinton got some macho to it, and he drives macho.
That's And so, you know, before we get going, so you're still doing stuff with Formula One, though, right? You're still involved.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Oh, yeah. This is my third year as an ambassador with Formula One. And like I said, I love working with them. And I've always been Willie T, my own style. And when they hired me, I said to them, and I asked them, I said, well, what made you make this proposal? And they said, we saw the film Uppity, mm-hmm. the Willie T. Ribbs story it's on Amazon Prime. And they said, we knew you were the person we wanted.
I love
and
it.
I said, right. I said, you know, I don't filter a lot. They said, yeah, we know.
Oh, no. That's not a word that goes, that is not in your Wikipedia page, my friend. It does not. There is no filter applied. Well, let's take you back a bit. You were the first black driver to ever test a Formula One car, which must have been pretty pivotal at the time. I know you were, you know, your career, you're ambitious, you're getting on with things. You had a lot of support from some unlikely people at that point, Muhammad Ali, Bill Cosby, and guys like that. But sitting in a Formula One car, did you realize you were breaking some boundaries at the time?
You know, I didn't think about, I've never looked at life or my career with boundaries in front of it. You know, I had great success. I was one of the winningest drivers in America when Bernie Ecclestone called and said, and I love Bernie. He's my uncle. I defend him because he saw the future of Formula One, and he knew that it had to grow. It had to be accessible to all people. Yeah. All. So he called and says, hey, I want you to come over to Portugal and test for me. He says, I can't guarantee you a deal because I have a sponsor, Olivetti, and they're going to have a big say-so as to who drives the car, but I still want you to come drive my car. We didn't think about the historical part of it until actually Lewis came along, and then a lot of the media mentioned that there's only been two black drivers in history on this planet to ever drive a Formula One car. And of course, when I did it, Lewis was 11 months old. He was still in diapers. I remind him of that every time I see him.
I'm sure you do. And now you're almost in diapers. So it's like a full story.
Once a man, twice a child.
That's true. So, okay, let's crack on. Give me this race in Barcelona. I said at the beginning of the show, I think we all had a lot of expectations because we just went through 2 years of going, it's just going to be Max winning. And of course he won this weekend, but seeing Lando on pole, which was a beautiful pole, maybe one of the best laps he's ever driven, seeing George go around the outside, seeing the way it unfolded, give me your take on the race as an ex-driver and a fan of Formula One. What's your thoughts about the race?
Well, the combination of Max Verstappen and Adrian Newey is probably the greatest combo ever in Formula One. Max is a phenomenal race driver, and Adrian Newey is the greatest designer engineer in Formula One history, hands down. No one's really that close to him. And after qualifying, what I've always seen about Red Bull, whether they're on full tanks, medium tanks, or light tanks, they can do a run better than anyone else. They can carry that speed from the beginning to the end, and pretty much Max has got a drivable car. Some of the other cars are fast for one or two laps, but then they start to fall off, whether it's, tire grip and mainly it's always tire grip, but they start to fall. Well, that Red Bull doesn't fall off, and they still got more cards up their sleeve. I don't think Red Bull has shown their full hand yet.
That's interesting. I mean, I agree, other than the fact that there's no, in that last race when Lando, when he won, you watched as he got closer and closer, and you just waited for Max to respond, and he never did, right? And you're going, wow, this is a different end to this story. Whoever wrote this script is not obeying the norm. And this weekend, as he got down, I was just chatting with Jeremiah, my producer, about it, as he got closer, you kept on waiting for Max to respond, but you never want someone to come within 2 or 3 seconds of you, do you? You know that, Willie. You're looking in your mirrors and you're like, all right, now he's in my danger zone. One little slip up. I wonder why he let them get so close in the end.
Max is brilliant at rope-a-dope. Muhammad Ali invented rope-a-dope. That's how he won Zaire against George Floyd. Max is brilliant at rope-a-dope. So is Lewis Hamilton.
So explain that.
In other words, as a race driver, you'll actually, if you know you got it in command, you'll watch the mirrors and you'll listen to the radio to your crew chief and they're telling you what's happening right behind you. At the same time, you're looking and seeing, okay, what has he got? You're rope-a-doping him. You're seeing, okay, let me see how much you got. You know who was brilliant at that? Dale Earnhardt. He can measure you right to the finish line. Max knows how to do that. Lewis knows how to do that. And Lando, you know, Norris, you know, not Chuck Norris, Lando Norris, right? There's only one Chuck, and that's Leclerc. But you watch in the next races, watch Verstappen, how he'll measure you and see what you got. And then once he sees what you've got, then he'll start to put a little gap on you. And he'll test you in different sections or segments of the racetrack. I love watching him. He's smart as hell.
I mean, that's really well said, because you do see him controlling the play. But what I also like is, and this is something you relate to more than any, as well as anyone, is that winning mentality. Let's talk about Lando for a minute. The minute Max Verstappen knew he could win races, he became unstoppable. But so did the whole team. Lando and McLaren have worked really hard to get him up there, and now Lando expects to win races. As an athlete, someone that's, I know you follow a lot of other sports, how critical is that winning mentality?
Well, Lando has won his first gig this year, right, in Miami. Once you get a bite of that apple, and I'm going to use sex as a metaphor, once you get your first action, you want more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ask James Hunt.
Yeah, maybe the...
That's how it is as a driver. That's how it is as any athlete. When you win your first fight or first competition like Theo Schutz, and once, you know, Lando, anytime you win, you learn a lot about yourself. That first win changes your whole mindset, as whether there's no question in your mind that you can do it again. All right. There's no more question. Now, when I won my first race at Snetterton, England in Formula Ford, I thought, okay, I understand what it takes to win. And now let me put that into play. And so it's in your mind, it's in your preparation. It's in your confidence.
Mm. Do you think Lando was right to be upset? I mean, it's pretty sporty, the fact that a second place 6 months ago would have looked like the world's best result for them, right? And now, you know, he won a race, he expects it. Do you agree that he had the fastest car, that it was just, it all went wrong at the start when George went by and then Max responded? Do you think that was how it went for him? Do you think they could have won with the different circumstances?
I think that there was two or three drivers could have won. Lewis could have done it. Lando could have done it. It's just now it's so, especially a place like Spain, you got those long, I mean, the tires on the left side of the car just get worked. Mm. And you really... That particular track with all those long right-handers, fast, some of them are fast, some of them, but the track puts, there's so many right-hand corners, it puts a lot of stress on the left side tires. So picking your tires, you know, during the race, what are we going to start with? What are we going to, on full tanks, okay? Because full tanks take a lot out of the tires. And then what are we going to do mid-race, what kind of tires are we going to go? And then, especially with speed, how are we going to close the deal, right?
Yeah.
Are we going to go on reds or mediums, right? All that. And then you get a 3.6 pit stop. You're done, son.
Yeah.
You better knock out those 2-1s, 2-2s, no more than 2-3s. Or you're you're a sitting duck.
Yeah, you can't pull back that second. Easy on track. The mechanics can lose it. And that's what I was saying when I was watching the race to myself. It's not just Max that makes them win races. That team, have you ever seen them lock a gun up? Have you seen them misstep? I mean, they've never had, I mean, yes, it has happened, but when the pressure's on, the whole Red Bull team performs like they're the starring quarterback. Everybody pulls together, which means Max comes in the pits knowing he's not going to lose time. And while McLaren do have the fastest pit stop, I think, of the year, don't they? 1.9 or something. They, as you say, they delivered a 3.6 second pit stop. It just unravels all the hard work.
Just like that. And, you know, consistency with pit stops is key. Sometimes those wheel nuts don't come off or on the way you want. And really, it's not the crew's fault. I mean, you know, you're putting a lot of, you know, the back end, that back end of that tire, that whole assembly is hotter than a firecracker.
Yeah.
If that nut welds itself on just a little bit tighter than normal, doesn't want to come off, doesn't go on. But they've got it down to a science. There's very few mistakes ever made on their pit stop.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's talk about the tire choice, because that, it doesn't make sense, right? The way they run, the race pace is 5 or 6 seconds slower than they qualify in. That just seems to me to show something is essentially wrong with the way Pirelli and Formula One approach the racing. I don't think the drivers like running off pace like that. And we have that time management phase in the middle of the race. But let's talk about sitting there with your teammate. You're sitting there, you're George and Lewis, and they say, okay, you're going to be on soft, medium, soft. Oh, and George, you're going to be on soft, medium, hard. Why? Why would you do that to me? Because we know the softs can do 20, 25 laps. And you know, with light fuel, you're going to be taking less, you know, energy out of the tires, and we're going to need to compete for the win. It blows my mind that goes on. I know split strategies is a clever way to go, especially with Red Bull. Sergio, it doesn't matter what he does. But with two competing drivers, George being the lead driver effectively moving forward, I don't get that. Do you ever sit there and go, hold on, they got the best minds in the business. How the hell are they coming up with this strategy?
Well, and it's worked it's gone both ways.
Yeah.
George has ended up on the softs at the end, and Lewis was on medium or hard. So, you know, if I was team manager, I would have everyone on the same set, the same sequence, the same tire combo throughout the race. If it didn't work, then it would be on me as the team manager.
Yeah, you're right, Willie. It can swing both ways. I just think when we look back at like the Vegas race, for all the hoo-ha about the manhole cover and everything, it turned out to be one of the best races because they had a little grip in the cold at night. So you see the cars coming through turn one, right, sideways, trying to get traction. Braking distances were a bit longer. Suddenly we had a motor race on our hands, and it can't be that complicated with all those brilliant minds to say, what will make great racing? And it isn't always about the most choice, is it? I mean, narrow the choice down or make the tires last longer, make them harder. That's my feeling on it. Because in the end, this whole thing is a spectacle.
Well, in regards to Las Vegas, I think whoever designed it, the track was, I don't know if they did it by accident, but it was damn brilliant. Because that track allowed 4 passing zones. Clean. You didn't have to muscle anybody to pass them. You had clean passes. You had rate. You had 2 or 3 passes a lap in Las Vegas. Most of the tracks don't have that. And I got to tell you, it was exciting as hell to watch. And manual covers, that's just the nature of the game for any first race on a street course.
Yeah.
I've been in I've been in this sport my entire life. And whether it's Long Beach or Monte Carlo, they all have those TV problems. But as far as get down to the get down racing, Vegas was, and this year is going to be even better.
Oh, I love to hear it. I agree. We're here. I'm already here. Hey, you're going to come to Vegas, right? So you should come in studio and have some fun. It would be good to do this in person. Anyway, psychology of drivers, as we look at, I'm just about to move to Ferrari, but I think it does relate to Mercedes too. You know, when you have a driver that's moving on to another team, there's that moment, that divergence, when they're not going to be in the meetings as much. You know, the new car is going to be developed and you're not a part of that. And there's a very seismic shift, sometimes subtle, sometimes gets more increasingly loud. And I think we're starting to hear the noise build up, both inside Mercedes, but especially at Ferrari, because Charles and Carlos are great mates, great synergy, but they touch wheels. They're pissed off at each other. I'm starting to see, you know, the cracks in the armor there. Psychology of the drivers and how it especially influences the Ferrari camp. What do you think?
Well, first of all, teammates are not sweet kissing cousins. I mean, you're competing to get your teammate, and you're competing for who's top dog in the team. That's normal. And I think it's in regards to Lewis coming to Ferrari, as well as Adrian Newey, it's going to be the greatest. It's going to be the greatest thing for Formula One ever. The numbers, watch the TV numbers, watch the attention worldwide of Lewis Hamilton and Newey together at Ferrari. It's going to be a mind. It's going to be the greatest thing that ever happened to Formula One. And I think Lewis will be a great teammate to Chuck. I think both of them will be fast as hell. Chuck's going to learn a lot from Lewis, and Chuck is going to keep Lewis on his speed game. And Adrian Newey, he's going to be like, remember that cartoon Bullwinkle?
Yeah.
Pull a rabbit out of the hat? Well, watch. When he puts his hands and mind, you know, Adrian Newey really does. Wind tunnel. The wind tunnel's in his eyes and his brain. He does not need to go in a wind tunnel. He can look at a car without being in a wind tunnel and say, I can make it faster just by looking at it. Just looking at the aero packet.
Yeah.
The guy is safe.
Yeah. You're right. It's going to be so exciting. Also, you know when you have your old dog and then you buy a new puppy? Suddenly your old dog's running around, jumping off fences and, you know, doing everything. I think that's what we're going to have with Lewis. Lewis is going to, so it might not last for long. It might only be a season or two, but I think you're going to find Lewis is going to be like the older dog when you have the puppy in the house. He's just going to raise his game. I love him. I think it's going to be, you can't win 8 championships, buddy, and not be that good, right? And still that good. So,
well, he is the winningest driver in history. That didn't happen by accident. He is absolutely, he's a Clydesdale. And, you know, and he's been attacked. And for those who attack him, they can't carry his jock strap. As a matter of fact, his jock strap's way too big for him. The guy is, and he's a great person, a kind human being. What do you attack?
Oh, Willie, the way you put things, you're a genius. I love the way you put it. You say what all of us think. That is so good. You know, when we look at Grand Prix, you and I know this maybe a lot more than the casual fan, and which is why I think it's great. The TV broadcast does a good job of looking at everybody down the field. You're watching the Alpines. You know, they finished 9th and 10th in the last 2 races. They're definitely on a bit of an upswing. Aston, They just haven't improved. It's not they're getting worse. They're just not improving. And you see the frustration of Fernando Alonso, one of the all-time greats. Lance Stroll still pulling off some great moves. And, you know, he ain't that bad to do what he does. But seeing all that action down the grid, drivers fighting for survival, you know that feeling. I gotta perform to save my seat. Give me a quick rundown on, you know, as you watch the race on Sunday and you see the Perez two-year contract in his bag, just basically midfield. You see Daniel Ricciardo doing his thing, not quite doing what he should do. Do you feel there is that moment at the top level of our sport, of any worldwide motorsports? Formula One is the pinnacle. There should not be grace given past a certain point, and you should be able to replace a driver with someone that is performing better or has the potential to win.
You know, there's so much pressure on the team to perform from all their sponsors and commercial partners. There's just pressure, and they've got a standard that they've got to live up to. The driver also has a standard to live up to in his own for himself, not just the team, because the driver really drives for himself first. Okay, you drive for you first, and then your team, right? Because if you don't want to perform, and not just want to perform, if you can't hang it out and deliver, then you got to look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, I'm wasting my time and the team's time, and it's not fair.
So some tough decisions to be made, I think. You know, with the talent that's in Ollie Bearman in the sidelines, Liam Lawson in the sidelines, this Kim Antonelli right there. I mean, there's some hot shots, right, who deserve their moment in the sun.
Well, I mean, have you ever seen a chain link fence and two dogs on one side and other, and they're barking at each other? Right. The young guns out there, they're all looking to they want to be there. They want to be where Ricardo is. They want to be where the older driver. They want to be where Lewis is. Fact is, Lewis is still a stud at his age, and Alonso, he's tough, but everything's got to work right, especially as you get older. When you get older, you know those testicles, they're still there, but they're not a grapefruit anymore.
Well, now it's time for Mobile One Pit Stop for the love of driving. Willie T. Ribs, who is the biggest influence in your racing career?
Jim Clark.
Love that, man. There's no one better than him. The driver you feared the most, he's lining up on the grid in Trans Am, would it have been TK, Tommy Kendall, or Ron Fellows?
I only raced against TK once or twice, probably Ron Fellows at the time.
Yeah, he was a fearsome dude. If you could win one of the Triple Crown events in motorsports, Indy 500, Le Mans, or Monaco F1, what would you choose?
Indy.
Really? Oh, that's an interesting answer. That's funny.
Always Indy.
Are you glad you were at the height of your career pre-social media, or do you wish you'd had a part in all that?
Well, both.
Because you would have been a dead man walking, my friend, with social media on your back. Will a female driver make it to Formula One in the next 5 years?
Yes, yes, yes. The toughest thing for female drivers in Formula One is so physically demanding. I mean, you got to be strong physically. You know, going 5 laps or 10 laps is one thing, but doing 2 hours is tough on you physically. I think you know, with sports science the way it is now, I think that will happen, no question.
Yeah, the talent's there, man. It's really there. And I think I know the answer. Maybe it's all three. Did you go racing because of the speed, the fast cars, or the girls?
None of it. I went racing because I love to race and compete.
And then, that's
was
number
all.
One.
That was all. That was all.
I love it. Willie, thank you so much for doing the Mobile One Pit Stop for the love of driving. You are a star, my friend. It's just great. It's so important to have you in the sport. You just, you know, we need the unfiltered version. I would love for you to come and join me in Vegas when you come here for the Grand Prix. Let's sit down and have a blast. Maybe get TK and some of the other guys involved. It would be super fun.
Done deal. You don't have to ask me twice.
I love
we go
it.
Back. Look. As long as we go back, you don't even have to ask me.
Oh, I know what I mean to ask you. Give me a 30-second premonition prediction for this weekend in Austria.
My prediction for Austria is going to be Red Bull. I mean, that's home field for them. That's their pride and poise. It's going to be Red Bull for sure, Verstappen.
Yeah, it is. Willie, take care of yourself, my friend. We'll stay in touch.
Cheers.
Thank you, buddy. Well, guys, the Las Vegas Concours is back for 2024. One of the world's most prestigious automotive events takes place November the 1st through the 3rd at Wynn Golf Club, right here at the Wynn Las Vegas. A one-of-a-kind and immersive experience, the Las Vegas Concours is an exhibition featuring more than 250 distinctive automobiles from around the world, paying homage to remarkable cars of the past, present, and future. A celebration of heritage, craftsmanship, and innovation, the Las Vegas Concours at Wynn Las Vegas brings car enthusiasts from all corners of the globe to revel in automotive excellence, all set against the dynamic backdrop of the Las Vegas Strip. And who will you find emceeing and hosting the event on stage, doling out the heavy hardware to this year's winners? Well, me, of course. So come and say hi this November. And for more information regarding recently added rooms and packages, you can visit lasvegasconcours.com. That's lasvegasconcours.com. I'm still laughing, actually, guys, at having Willie T. Ribs on the show. I'm not sure how much of that we're going to be able to use. He was actually, just in case you've never heard him talk in person, that was the tame version of Willie. Just imagine Unleashed. It's definitely entertaining, but great that he's involved in Formula One. Well, next up is the Austrian Grand Prix. This is the first time in the season they're going three races in a row. A tremendous amount of pressure on everybody involved. But remember, the Red Bull Ring. Home of Red Bull. It was the whole track. I've raced on it, actually, in sports cars. I raced on it in the first year they built this track up, and it was just fabulous to drive on, set in the beautiful mountains all around. A special place to be, special place for Red Bull to perform. It does make you think, though, that as Christian Horner said on social media this morning, he, as in Sergio Perez, has to do more to back up the team. He has to do more to be near the front. And if ever there was a weekend to do it, I would suggest, Mr. Perez, that this is the one. 71 laps of the 4.318-kilometer Red Bull Ring in Spielberg will be coming up this Sunday on June 30th. And when you think about it, this time last year, Max had won 7 out of the 9 races so far. And we were just getting that glimmer. And more than a glimmer, it was actually the sun appearing over the horizon, really. But the other teams were going, oh my God, we're in for a period of dominance. How are we going to stop the Max Verstappen Red Bull train juggernaut, if you like? And they couldn't, could they? But right now, there are different contenders, especially when you think back. Lando Norris last year was 4th, which was an outrageously good result. But coming into this year, he will want a victory. And there's nothing like ripping it from the hands of the incumbent challenger, if you like, with Max there on his home circuit. So I know Lando and Lewis and George, it's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to the race. For me, the strategy is going to be about keeping Max Verstappen on edge, never letting him get out of your window too far away, keeping the pressure on. It's not an easy track to make a mistake on. It's definitely, Barcelona has a lot more corners that can throw you off. I think, and definitely my own experience, and also when you watch them drive around, it's a track where mistakes are rarely made. So pressure in the pits. Everybody's going to be working on the road to make sure their pit stops are better. Get pole, take pole away from him, and always bear in mind, Red Bull do not mess up. So put yourself in a position that when they do, you're there to clear it up. Ferrari should be back. You know that. You know they've got their heads down this week. It's going to be a big part of it. Mercedes definitely have the pace, and I'm just really looking forward to it. And hopefully, Carlos Sainz will announce his plans for the future. If you're a betting man, I'm sure the odds are all over the place going into this weekend. So I think it's I'm here in Vegas. I'm in the right place for that. Thank you very much to The Win Las Vegas for this great hospitality. And of course, to Mobile One for the love of driving. And to Willie T. Ribs, you are a legend, my friend. It was one of my favorite interviews. I think we've got Will Buxton coming on in the next couple of weeks. So we've got so much to ask him about. And if you do have any questions, get on social media, ask me them, and I'll ask our next guest what your question was. Anyway, everybody, thank you so much for watching Drive to Win. See you in a week. Thank you.